Hey everyone, our guest today on Doctor to Doctor is Dr. Clark Stevens. Dr. Stevens is the owner of Braces Omaha and the founder and CEO of Wild Smiles Braces. He's also the founder of the University of Nebraska Medical Center Dental Facial Clinic. He received his DDS degree from University of Nebraska Dental College and his MS and orthodontic certificate from University of North Carolina Department of Orthodontics. He's here today to share his insights and wisdom from his 40 plus years in the business. Dr. Stevens, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks. I'm excited to be here. It's going to be fun.
Oh yeah, for sure. So it's 40 years, huh? So the title is of this segment is 40 days and 40 years. So tell us a little bit about what you're thinking when you came up with that idea.
Okay. Well, it was 40 years ago that I got started in orthodontics.
Yeah.
I went to dental school in the late 70s, and then I got out of my orthodontic program in North Carolina at the end of August of 79, and then my first patient I saw in January of 80. So I'm now in the 40th year.
Oh wow!
And, I went to dental school because I thought I wanted to be either a doctor, a medical doctor, or a dentist. Mm-hmm. And I was able to get into dental school after 2 years of undergraduate work.
Oh wow!
So I went to dental school, and but I hated dentistry. I just didn't really enjoy it.
Oh really? Okay.
I'd been an artist through high school and college. What I did is I made metal sculptures and sold them at art shows. That's the only job I've ever had except for orthodontics.
Oh,
so
wow.
I only worked for myself. And so during that time, I was being a pretty creative guy. So dentistry seemed to me like repair work. There was nothing that was really creative in it, in the way that it was presented to me at the time. Mm-hmm. So I told my dad, I said, if I don't get into orthodontics, I'm going to be a bartender or something else. I just can't get in.
So all right.
I was fortunate to get into orthodontics right away, or I don't know what I'd be. So I enjoyed that whole experience in orthodontics in North Carolina. And Dr. Prophet was an incredible mentor of mine. He challenged me to think about things and to grow, and I really, really did love that. And but you know, I started out, I had great parents and I had one older brother, but I think a lot of times you have to have something be your base that you work from. And my parents, they probably started me out with some basic rules to love God and love your neighbor and to save some money along the way. So that those things have helped me.
Oh, those are good pillars to live by.
Yeah. Yeah, so that helped. And then, you know, I think God gave me a talent to be a little bit creative. So I'm always thinking of new things and trying to come up with that. And that's what makes orthodontics so fun for me, is that everybody is a new creation, something new I can do. So I really like that part.
How long were you with Dr. Prophet?
Well, that was just 2.5 years, the ortho program then. And then over the years, though, he became a little bit a closer friend in that I always went back to Chapel Hill for things. And then he also helped me design Wild Smiles Braces, not design them, but help mentor me through the process, because I didn't know anything about manufacturing braces. And I know a little bit more about it now. You know, things have changed quite a bit since I started out 4 years ago. So when in the residency, all of our patients except one were completely banded. All the anterior teeth had bands on, all the posterior teeth had bands on.
Yeah.
So they all got banded. Wow. And there were some early bondable brackets that were a perforated base. It was just sort of like a pad with holes in it, and the bracket was welded on it, and then that was smashed onto the tooth, and the composite material would come through and that would hold it in place. So those were the bonded brackets. They weren't that aesthetic, but they were more comfortable to put on. So that whole concept really moved along pretty quickly after that, with indirect bonding and those kinds of things. But one of the things that happened in making braces, I mean, the twin brackets pretty much been the same since Edward Angle developed it in 1900. But through all the braces were made out of gold until the middle 50s, and Unitex started making stainless steel instead of gold. And then they also had the concept of sending out salesmen across the country to sell this new product because they're cheaper than the gold.
And, yeah, I can imagine.
So that's really what got the stainless steel going, was Unitech starting that in the 50s. And then there's a thing called metal injection molding, which most brackets are made of now. And that was really developed, started by the Russians. And that started in the late 60s because they were able to make cast a bracket or cast something, and you can cast it and it's 150% bigger than the actual finished product. So you can make the mold bigger than what you finish with. So once you cast it with this kind of resin material and you heat up material after you take the mold apart, and then it shrinks down to the actual size. So that's the way most brackets are made today.
Is it? Okay.
Before then, what they would do is they would cut a slot in the bracket. So it would be an actual mechanical thing that would cut a slot. And I believe Armco still does that on their custom appliances. They'll cut the slot in place. And but now most of them are molded, and so that they used to change the size of the slot from 018 to 022. It was 022 originally with the gold, and then the mechanical principles of stainless steel would suggest you should use an 018 bracket. So because it's much stiffer than gold.
Yeah.
So that's why there's this discrepancy. Orthodontists are very slow to change. They still prefer the 022 bracket over the 018 bracket.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, so it's kind of an interesting thing. But anyway, that's when I got started. It was just a little bit different. There was really no phase one treatments. And there was surgery was just starting, and North Carolina was a big place for surgical treatment.
So,
because he read all the textbooks.
Oh, yeah. So how long were you in North Carolina, and when did you go to Omaha?
Yeah, so I went to Omaha in the end of 1979, and since I knew about orthodontic surgery, I thought, well, this is great. I know all about the surgery, and not very many people in town are doing it. Well, and it was because they just didn't want to do it and didn't know about it. So I went to the oral surgery department, and they said, oh, we're so happy you're here, because we'd send patients to the orthodontist and then never get them back. And at the time, they were doing some single tooth osteotomies. They cut the anterior teeth. They retract the gingiva and then cut the anterior teeth between the teeth. Then they'd sew that, suture that back up, wait about a month, and then they'd fracture the teeth forward to align them, and then do the jaw surgery so that they could do some jaw surgery. So when I came to town, they were really happy that I knew about surgical orthodontics. And then I teamed up with a young doctor at the time, Harold Too, and we started the dental facial program there, and I did that for a long time.
Yes.
But just one day a week. I just did one day a week, one or two days.
Yeah. Okay.
I started my practice as well.
Oh, so you've been in practice for those 40 years.
That's yeah, I've been in practice for 40 years. Yeah.
And you're teaching at the same time you're in practice.
Yeah. Yeah. So because you're not that busy when you first start out. And I thought, well, most doctors work 4 days a week. So I thought I'd work the clinic one day a week. And so that's what I did. You know, I'd take some phone calls during the week from residents about things, but mostly I was just there one day a week, where we did a treatment planning session, and then we saw the patients that we needed surgery.
Yeah. So fast forwarding to today, we're going through this COVID, which is your 40 days part of the talk.
Yeah.
What is it? Has it been tough? What has it been like?
Well, no and yes. And I didn't ever experience being scared about or wondering about what's going to happen, because I do think I have a faith in God, and I feel like God has control of my life. And so I don't need to worry about stuff day to day. So I feel like it's going to be fine. And I think America's a great place. And so I think we're going to get through this thing. So that part hasn't been tough, but what's been tough is figuring out what to do during the time when you have nothing going on. So what it did is it caused me to think about some stuff, and then it also challenged me about what am I going to be like in the future, because 40 days can be a major change in your life. You know, when you don't need, like, maybe I think it's 7 times you have to repeat a task, and then all of a sudden it becomes a habit. Well, 40 days of repeating this thing is becoming a habit for everybody. And people are wondering what we're going to do with it. And I think one of the things that's become important to me is I think relationships are more important. I realize that I really like meeting new people. I like being out. I like.
Yes, I agree with that for sure.
Yeah. So I think the relationship thing is really super important. And then we all did stuff or do stuff that really don't matter. And I'm less interested in consumer stuff than I was before, which I don't really.
I have been wondering that myself, because I mean, the whole economy is built so much on us spending, and yes, everyone has immediately gone into saving, making sure their resource, you know, really tight of their resources. So I wonder how much that's going to affect just long-term spending habits in general.
Yeah, I did a couple gals that work for me, they've been eating at home, and so they go, well, I have a bunch of money now. So
yeah, exactly.
Yep. They've been buying online, so I think there'll still be some purchasing going on. About cars and houses and remodels, I don't know if those will all kind of change. I think they'll go, do I need all this stuff?
Yeah, maybe the mindless spending.
Do I need it all this stuff?
Yeah, for sure.
In the middle of this, I replaced the driveway in my house, which is not really a perch any fun. You just spend a lot of money for what you had before. So I think those kinds of things I do. But so it's been challenging to think about the future. I'm not so concerned about the immediate, but the future, you kind of start to think about what's that going to be like and what's your relationship with your patients and your team and all that kind of be.
Have you changed a lot of processes that in the practice right now?
Well, I'm not sure that we used anything yet because we haven't really started. We start next week back with patients. We see once a week, we've been seeing emergency patients. You know, you wouldn't think orthodontics would have emergency. I have one adult patient been in every week because he has some concerns, and some people have things off and you need to fix. So there are some reasons to take care of people in emergency. So we've been, we're doing some social distancing in a reception room. We've kind of marked off some chairs that not to be used. And we have a couch in there. And so we want to let 2 people sit on the couch. And then we're asking next week when patients start that they come in healthy.
Yes, right.
Please. If something doesn't come in. And then we're going to brush your teeth when they get here and use some mouth with alcohol in it to rinse out before we start on them, and we keep patients separated. So we're going to do those kinds of things, and we don't have any of the amenities we used to have. We took the coffee out, we took the water out, we took out contests, we had some toys or games and things for people to play with. Well, they took those out, so those kinds of things will definitely change for a while.
How have the patients been responding kind of during this off time while you've been?
Well, I think one thing that I realized is that we had some call in parents and go say, hey, you know, I still need to spend some money in my savings account. So can I buy a couple extra retainers, pay for those in advance just to be able to use that before?
That's interesting. Okay.
So that's happened. And then we found that people have. We had a couple of people pay off when they got their relief check from the government. They decided to pay orthodontics. So found that people have continued to pay over this period of time. I think the thing that told me is that our patients really trust us. That we're kind of part of their family, and in a way that we would try to be really. Close with them, and I'm fun, my staff's fun, we really like to interact with them. So I had never really realized, I mean, I knew they did, but once you realize that they are starting to pay when they don't have to pay, I mean
they're prioritizing you over all these other things they could use the money for. I think that's a
huge thing. That's a really huge, when we're saying we can't see you till till May or June, you know, well, okay, I might not pay, but they have. So that was really great. And I also think when they call in, someone call in and say, so what do you have going on when you're going to see patients? They're very understanding if we had to postpone them and move them on. It was kind of a moving target at first. So we would just cancel patients a week in advance. We didn't go and cancel the whole month until we knew about it.
Yeah.
So I think that was easier on patients. Everybody was kind of dealing with the same thing. What's going to happen next?
Yeah, for sure.
But I think that that whole thing of patients really liking us and loving us and trusting us was a big deal to learn.
I know, it shows you obviously been doing the right things all this time if people care.
We try to. I mean, you always remember the ones that don't appreciate your care.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. It's like that one
negative. Those up. Yeah.
Negative. So have you experienced a revenue shortfall? What has that been like?
Well, you know, no, we haven't. Actually, we've been really aggressive this last year in marketing the practice, and we have seen a lot of growth. And so actually, my April revenue last year was less than my April revenue of this year. And we didn't do any starts. So that's great.
It's interesting.
It's really interesting. Yes, I know people paid in advance. So it was an incredible thing. So I don't feel too bad. And we have a bunch of new patients scheduled to start, come in May. And we've had three new patients in the last 8 new patient appointments. So people are starting to come back. So I think, we're not going to revenue shortfall because there wasn't any, which I found surprising. Because right at first,
says a lot about the practice for sure. Where do you think those new starts in May came from? Were you mining kind of pending patients? Was it from marketing efforts just not stopping?
It was from an ongoing thing that's going on. I had a marketing kind of. We give away some free treatment for our practice spokesperson. So we had several people apply for that and come in as set up as new patient appointments. We'll start it anyway. And then So we're going to give one away. We have those. And then we are also doing some stuff with teachers, giving a teacher reward away, and we have a few of those we're going to see. And
we've been doing some aggressive contests.
So because there was, we thought about like expensive to continue to do that. Should we quit and not do the marketing? But this is probably the best time because there's nothing out there. We go out there and market aggressively in this period. So I think that
even the cost per ads is lower just because there's not as much competition. So it's a good time.
I think it's going to.
So has profitability been good? The revenue's been the same. Has profitability been just as good?
Well, that's one thing I started to look at a little bit. Where did I make the most money over the last few years? And I think if I could be the orthodontist that only made replacement retainers, that would be great. They're very profitable. That's the most profitable area. But the second most profitable thing is patients that had phase one and phase two treatments, because their treatment fee ends up being usually larger. So, and their treatment time doesn't need to be that much longer. And those phase one and phase two are probably the most profitable. The next is braces, and the least profitable are aligner patients. I think they all have to be part of your system, but there's a lot about aligners are going to be great for your practice because you can lose an employee and that'll save you some money. But they're at least in my practice, and maybe it's because the way I am, a lot of those aligner patients are very high maintenance. And
general, like the persona, that the type of person getting aligners?
And they need my attention. I need
instead of the team
and stuff like that. So it takes a little bit of time than I thought it would. So anyway, I think that's what I had never looked at the profitability of phase one and phase two, or just a full treatment and aligners. So I'm still going to do them all, but I found patients, one of the things that I found that I wondered about if patients really understand the benefit of orthodontics. Because so, you know, here I am not doing anything. Are they going to come to the office? Are they going to want to come in?
Yeah.
And I think they really do understand for their kids. They go, I want my kids to have the best future possible. I want them to be able to present their smile and good among their peers and be more successful. All kinds of studies show a smile is way helps you out in life more than a non-smile does.
Oh, so, absolutely. No, that's true.
I really think that that's a huge thing, that those patients will keep coming. And I also think the patient that is maybe an adult and desiring treatment function or their bite or is the aesthetics, they're still going to come back. I think more if they have insurance than if they don't, or if they have a stable job. If they don't have, I'm not so sure. People will sacrifice for their kids. And I, one thing that I noticed a few years ago, but I didn't really think about as much as I have over the last few weeks, was that I have patients and they had braces as a kid, bringing their kid in when they're 7 or 8, and they say, okay, can we get started with something now that's going to make it easier for them?
Yeah.
North Carolina, and Bill Proffitt was one of the first guys out there, did all these 2,500 patients, did some phase one treatment and phase two. And he saw no benefit to doing phase one treatments compared to doing it as later on when they're teenagers. So that was what I always told patients.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And, but I, if the occasional parents, I don't know, for my child if you started. I did. I accommodated them. And I want to say that I think that my results are because if they have, most patients come in with a little bit of overbite, overjet, and they need maybe a palatal expansion at some point, or they might need some sort of appliance to make their jaw grow. Even though it's not any more efficient as a young person than it is as a 12 or 13 year old, I think you get compliance a lot better, and then you can get that done. And also, if the patient doesn't happen to respond to your growth, then you're in a perfect place to say, okay, now we need, that did not work. We have to talk about doing jaw surgery or compromise that doesn't fix your bite completely. So it really helps me communicate with the patient what they need to do. I think it's kind of a nice thing to do a phase one and phase two, because it, you know, the kind of, you can get the skeletal result you need and then finish up phase two in any way they want. Phase one, you know, it was perfect for my wild smiles brackets, or, you know, they like the colored ties, they like all, yeah, this, they want people to see them wearing so they love that. And I think a little bit more control when you put braces on than you do with aligner therapy, as far as the anterior placement of the teeth, the rotations and those kinds of things, I think work really well with fixed appliances. They don't always work with Invisalign or any other kind of alignment liner.
Yeah, so you've really become a fan of phase one over the years. That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah, and I think now, now more than ever, because I think that people are going to come in and ask us to do some stuff, maybe a lower cost, so the first phase doesn't cost a lot,
yeah,
and they can come in and get started. And the other thing about my patients that have had phase treatment, they're more likely to finish up with their phase two if I have them on recall from one, than if I just had them on an observation. Observations, you can trail along, or you have you know, a lot of orthodontists have a kids club and they try to encourage them to come in, but once they've had braces, they're always pretty dedicated to come back in. So I think that makes it also better to think about doing some phase one treatments.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So what do you think about all these virtual consults, kind of that being introduced into the process?
Well, I looked at my console and my 1% of the patients who come to make an appointment in my office do not show up. And one of the things we ask them to do is to fill out their health history online before they come in and all their insurance information, submit all of that.
Yeah.
And so those 14% don't do that. They don't show up and they don't do that. So we know that that's not a very good patient to pursue. And all the others, we have the 8%, 76% of the people decide to start treatment if they come in the office and go through the consultation. Mm-hmm. So we know that we're really efficient and we have good good compliance if we get people in the office. My treatment coordinator is excellent. My staff is excellent. So I think it's going to be hard for people to really get the personnel of your practice in a virtual consult. I've seen some talk about it, and you know, those people, I don't think you get 76%. You get a few that decide to start.
Yeah.
It's the shoppers that want to come in, and we want the kind of person that's just going to say, hey, I'm going to start because I like being here. One of the things I heard the first week in dental school, the dean of the dental school came in and he said, okay, welcome to dentistry. It's the best profession. It's way better than medicine because the patients are better.
Did he say that? Wow.
Oh yeah. He was really kind of arrogant about it. I know we're going to say this now, but he said, so I'm saying it, but he said, most people that go to the dentist regularly are excellent patients. So you're going to build your life around about 30% of the population that values what you're doing. He says there's 70% out there that will just come for emergencies, but you want to build your life around those 30%. So I think really that's who orthodontists really get to come to our practices, is that 30% that is discriminating and understands that the orthodontist provides better service than the general dentist. So I think we're pursuing that 30%, and those people respond to the kind of care you give, how you take care of their kids. I've had so many patients come start and say, my daughter or my son just love coming in. They like meeting you, and I feel really comfortable in the office. And those are your best advocates for out there talking about how great you are.
So it sounds like you have a really great office culture and team. Can you tell us a little bit how did you create that? What are your secrets? You've been doing it a while, so you should have it down, right?
Well, yeah, one thing is that I think it helps to be honest in everything you do, and I'm pretty honest, and you can't, and then if I mess up on something, I usually confess that and say, hey, I shouldn't have done it that way. And I think that helps and I treat everybody the same. And I'm a person that likes people, and so I always see good in everybody. There are people that don't, and there's doctors that don't, that they have a hard time with that. And I always, if you're that kind of doctor that just doesn't enjoy being around people, make sure you get a team that enjoys being around people, because they can be that personality for you if you don't have it. Because some guys just don't have it. Some guys and girls that gals. Anyway, some orthodontists don't have it. But so I think it's important that you have a team that's like that.
Yes. So, well, at least if you're like that, you can still have a practice. You just have to know that's your weakness and work.
Right. Right. Be willing to say that. Yeah.
All right. So if you had to do it all over again, what would you change? What do you think? What choices would you make differently, you think?
In my, okay. In 40 years. I wouldn't, well, one thing I did, which was, this was probably, let's see, this is 20 years ago. So the first few years, I had a practice, a really busy practice, and it kind of started to level off. So I thought, oh, I need to have a satellite office. So I built a satellite office, and I moved into there. And then I have one of my mentors is a general dentist in Dallas, and he challenged me. He says, so why do you need two offices? How far apart are they? And I go, oh, they're like 5 miles apart. He says, now, do you have anybody that comes from out of town for your services? And I said, well, actually, I have this guy that flies a UPS plane. He lives in Coral Gables, and he comes up for his appointments.
Yeah.
And he said, so I think people will drive across town. I don't think you need two offices. That was really helpful for me. I closed that second office, and it made me more profitable where I was at to be in just one office. And people still travel, you know, a couple hundred miles away to come into my office, and they pass orthodontists on the way. So I think that's been helpful. So I would say what I would change is I'm not so sure I'd think about a two office environment. So I probably wouldn't have done that. I also tried to get a partner a few times in the practice, and that didn't ever work out. It was kind of a waste of time. I don't know that I'd do that. At this point in my career, most young orthodontists just want the old character to be out. So I think that's the trend, is to just sell your practice and get out when you're ready. So I'm not pursuing that idea of a partner right now.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
So, and then I also, you know, when I first started my practice, because I was in a dental facial clinic, I spent a lot of time with adult patients that needed surgeries, because I got a lot of those referred to me, and a lot of dentists referred to me, and for that reason, they knew that I was a good orthodontist, but I did not get as many teenagers at that time, and I didn't aggressively pursue them, and I wish I would have then, because there's nothing better than young patients. So I think, if I remember this correctly, Neil Kravitz has said, near is better than far. Somebody close to your office is better than far. Girls are better than boys, and young is better than old.
Yes.
That's true. That really works great for orthodontics. So, and did I say girls are better than boys?
Yeah.
That says that too, yeah. So. Her daughter would be beautiful.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you have an opinion about just sharing office space with a dentist?
I had a classmate in dental school that started a pediatric practice and dental practice after I started mine. And he said, can I just work out of your office 2 days a week? The 2 days I wasn't using it, Dan, he was going to work the day I was teaching and then on a Saturday. And I said, sure, that'd be fine. And that brought me no new patients. It was just a hassle. I don't think it's worth sharing space. You know, you can make enough money in orthodontics and have your own space. I think you should just keep it and not have to worry with that. You know, I've done some real estate development and rental houses and duplexes, and they're just a distraction. And
that's good advice right there. So just stay focused.
Stay focused.
It sounds like overall keep control of your own house, you know?
Right. And also, I think it's really important to continue with education. I think you need two kinds of education. One is a little bit about business, but you can get that a lot of places. But I think you really need to always pursue being a better orthodontist to try to do your treatments better and keep up with whatever the new things are. And there's about every 10 years or something new that's a little bit different.
But, what is like in the last 40 years or so, what do you think was the best invention, the biggest innovation that really changed the practice for you?
Oh, besides Wild Smiles, I would say.
Of course. Absolutely.
I think, you know, it's one thing that's been fits with our culture right now is when I started practice, a patient would call in for an appointment, then we'd appoint them, they'd come in, I'd say, yeah, I think you need braces, and then it might cost something like this. And then, but you need to come in to take records, and so we'd take impressions, and we'd pour up plaster, and we'd have these models, and we'd have a consultation and show them, and then we'd have a consultation and schedule that. So they'd be in the office for three times before they'd get anything.
Yeah.
And now we see patients, and we want to close them on that first day they come in. So we get the records, we talk to them, and we have a good experience for them. So it's that part is totally different and way better because that's where our culture is now. I do think the people need to be taken care of personally in that time. And so I think you need to really be a good people person or have somebody as a treatment coordinator that is that, and also a good salesperson.
Because it's even more important. You have less time with the person. So
sure. And push them through to make that decision. That's important. And I think, you know, certainly aligner therapy has changed a lot. You know, when it first came out, I thought, this is really clever. And I thought, what was really clever about it, one part that was clever is that a non-orthodontist thought of it. You know, it was a former patient that knew when he jammed on his retainer, his teeth got straight again. So he thought, well, I'll run this as a project. He was a resident, a graduate student at Stanford. So the venture capital project he put together, and then he got it funded, and then it went crazy.
Oh, wow. And, that's interesting.
Yeah, interesting deal. And that was, those first aligners were not very good compared to what we have today.
What are your thoughts about phase one Invisalign?
Well, I have only one patient in that, and it was a difficult treatment plan. It was difficult to get Invisalign to want to do it the way I wanted to do it. And so, because I used Invisalign, and but this is a friend of mine's daughter, and usually the parent is the one telling you that they don't want braces for their kid. I want Invisalign. So the dad really directed that. And so
that's interesting.
She has a small lower jaw. She needs her jaw to grow. And so I recommended to her, so we put some braces on and move the upper teeth forward to do that. And he didn't want to do that. So to get Invisalign, it was a 20 aligners she had to wear before you got enough overjet to start doing the class two advancement. She's getting tired of the appliances now. I did get them to give it to her after 12. I resubmitted it after we'd done 10. And so then they did let me do it then. But it's a difficult treatment plan. And I just think it's better off if you start off with a phase one fixed approach. And then you have these high maintenance characters that are your family or friends. They're the worst ones.
Oh, I can imagine that, of course. Your family or friends. If someone's a resident out there and they want to get started, do you think they should start their own practice, work for someone? What would your advice be for that new person?
Well, I think you should start your own practice if that's what you want to do. I think that you need to be cognizant of the costs. And because I've owned some office buildings and other stuff,
yeah,
I can tell you a lot of landlords are more flexible with their tenant improvement dollars than you might think. So I'd ask them for a lot, or ask them for a rent reduction if you're going to spend it all. And then I would think you just need to think about how you're spending your money. You probably don't need everything right away. You can have some mobile units that take care of some stuff for you. There was an orthodontist that when I started practice, he didn't even have it. He had air in tanks. He didn't have a compressor. He just had air in tanks that he replaced every other month as they wore out. And he worked for 40 years doing that.
Oh, wow.
So there are ways to save some money. And I think that's the hardest thing, is if you get started and you have a huge amount of debt and you have a lot of rent payments, and then you don't feel like you can get over that. That's scary for a lot of young orthodontists to have that expense. So I still don't have any wallpaper in my office. My first office, I didn't put wallpaper in. I didn't put any carpet down. I polished the concrete floors, which was really extremely modern in the early 80s.
Absolutely.
And I didn't put a ceiling in. You know, I sprayed the ceiling, had it sprayed black and spotlights and stuff like that. So it was a really cool office, but I'd just be keep your expenses down. And I think you can do it.
That's great advice. You know, just take the leap and do it.
Yeah. And then if you're not in the office, you're not seeing patients, and you can go to the mall and start talking to people and handing your card out and just say, hey, I'm new in town. This is what I'm doing.
So, oh yeah. Just some good old fashioned networking.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember sitting at I was at a Neiman Marcus coffee shop restaurant in Fort Lauderdale, and I was sitting next to this lady, and she was talking to me. She worked for this plastic surgeon, and she just handed me her card, and she said, you know, I know you don't need plastic surgery right now, but if you ever think you want to do something with your eyes or, you know, a little facelift or something like that, here's my card. You might need it. You might have a friend that needs it. So yeah, it was just such a great way she presented it that, you know, I've tried to do that since then, but you can always do that.
So where do you think, besides networking and kind of working with doctors, getting more referrals, what other kind of marketing do you think someone who's established or new should pursue?
Well, I think, you know, right now the rage is social media stuff. So, and mothers are on Facebook and Instagram, patients are on Instagram. I've been doing quite a bit with TikTok. I don't know.
Have you? That's smart. Good move.
Yeah, I'll do a joke of the day every day on TikTok, and you know, patients kind of think that's cool. But I just got started with that, so I can't wait till next week to start asking them to get on that and do it. Even though I'm embarrassed myself at looking at some of the stuff that's put on TikTok. Keep mine pretty nice. But so I don't know how that goes, but I think you have to be cognizant of what's going on socially and make sure you're part of that. And I think social media right now is where it's at. And, you know, also helps if you're married, have kids, and you get your kids out and your wife or husband starts talking about what's going on and you're an orthodontist, that works really well as well.
Yeah, it's really feeding that word of mouth for sure. I agree with that. So you're saying Wild Smiles in regards to phase one. Why is it so perfect for phase one?
Well, the Ohio State University did a study. They were going to figure out what do patients think is an aesthetic appliance. And so they, at the last minute, they threw in Wild Smiles, and they found out that kids between the ages of 7 and 10, 70% of them will pick Wild Smiles or some variation of Wild Smiles with colors.
70%.
If you move it up to age 12, it's 40%. The ones that are even interested in the clear kind of appliances, they're usually 16 or older. Those kind of patients care about that. But the younger ones want people to know they have braces on. And then, so the young patients, it's really a good thing to use them, and it can be fun for them. And then they can get all that worked out, and then they can either do it again if they want to. And I've had that, you know, hearts this time. I had flowers last time. I've had that happen. And it's amazing. Adults pick them. I had a lip salesman that that came in, and he was like 40 years old. And he says, well, since I'm going to have braces, I think I want those diamonds. He says, I want to talk about them when I go in and see my customer.
Yeah.
You just never know.
You know, that's true. I mean, that makes sense. I have a problem.
I had a patient, she is one of these people that goes to Disney World or Disneyland every month. And so she was 50 years old, and she had hearts and stars and flowers on every other tooth. And she had fancy clothes on and stuff. She always was fancy. So there's just some adults that'll do anything. So, and we're going to have some Disney stuff in the next couple months with the Wild Smile. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, a little bit of announcement about that partnership. That's very exciting. Maybe some Disney branding.
It's been a while to do that. It's not easy to get Mickey on your side.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been watching some stuff on Netflix about Disney, and it's just incredible. I tell you, that brand. Yeah. So over these 40 years of practice, what is kind of the big takeaways? What's the advice you'd like to give everyone out there?
Well, you know, I think just for this whole 40 days, I realized it took me about 10 days to adjust and not doing anything. What's going on? And wondering. And then another 10 days to relax. So it took me like almost 3 weeks to just get like totally relaxed and figure, okay, this is the routine I'm going through. And then I started doing what I've been, monitoring all the numbers and stuff in my office and thinking about what's really going on. And so now, then the last few days, I've been thinking about how are we going to make this work in the practice.
Yeah.
So I just feel like when a young person comes in my office, I'm going to say, hey, you know, we can do these things in phase one if you want to do it. We can wait till phase two, but I think, or full treatment, but sometimes people come in and they want to get started, and I've discouraged them from starting, mostly because of the North Carolina profit studies, but I really those patients that have forced me to do it, kind of asked me to do it, I realized that they actually ended up getting better results. I think everything just works out nicer because I wish I could say I was a perfect orthodontist. Not every result is exactly perfect. And if I have two chances, it's probably better than if I just had one.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Luke wants to know, what is the ideal clinical application for Wild Smiles?
Well, I think the ideal clinical thing is when a patient wants it. And the most patients that are young want it more because the numbers show that. But they work on any kind of patient. And I think it's nice to accommodate the patient when they come in because they're often very fearful. I remember I had an assistant that worked for me, and she wasn't a real people person. And she was German. She liked everything all done exactly the same.
Okay.
She didn't really like Wild Smiles because she couldn't get it set up before the kid walked in the door.
Hmm.
You'd have to ask the patient what they wanted to put on. Yeah. But what it did is it generated some conversation with the patient so that they were in the room, you know. Sometimes the kids just sitting there and they get their lip stretchers on, they do all this stuff, and they really don't know what happened. But this actually generates conversation. And the other thing, I think it's really been great for me too, because if I see a kid doesn't pick them, then I know that kid is pretty much an introvert and doesn't really want to talk that much, or they might have something else that's more interesting. Yeah. If they like, they might be a gamer or something like that. So it gets me to think about them differently and then ask them some questions. So my interaction with them kind of improved with Wild Smiles. So I just think anybody that you want to have a really good relationship with, let them pick what kind of appliance they want. I know when I started Wild Smiles, I had less people pick clear braces than they did before. It dropped about 10%. Yeah. And nobody likes clear braces because they break, they're hard to get off, and they don't really look that good. Orthodontists don't like them that much. They don't slide as well. The wires don't slide through them. So
yeah. So really empowering that patient is really
right. Yeah, it's empowering the patient. Yeah.
So if someone wants to learn more about Wild Smiles, what should they do? What is the best way to get in touch?
Oh, well, they should just go to wildsmilesbraces.com and give us a call. And we also have run an ad on the back of the AJODO, so that we're easy to find in print.
Oh, so, yeah.
Davin Bird is the guy that runs that, and he does a super job with that.
Someone wants to know if you have a favorite quote you'd like to leave us with.
Oh, that's funny. I do quotes every day and I forget. But, you know, I think one thing that's when I heard it, I realize it's everywhere in some form. But I guess Winston Churchill was at at St. Louis University doing a graduation in the early 50s after he got out of, they kicked him out of office in England. Like, they didn't want him after the war. And so then it was, if you've ever been to St. Louis in the summertime, it's impossibly hot. And so this was all pre-air conditioning. So, you know, it had gone on a long time. He gets up to the podium and he says, "Never, never, never, never give up." And then he sat down. So that's a perfect presentation for him. But I think that's it. If you have a dream or something you want to do, never give up. If you practice, if you think you want to start your own practice, just go ahead and do it. And I think I always tell people when I've given talks about Wild Smiles, you know, I didn't really give up because nobody wanted to make them for me. So I started doing it myself. But I didn't give up, and it's proved to be a good thing that people actually like my idea. And so I would say just don't give up. Don't lose that dream you have.
Awesome. Great advice. Well, Clark, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Great talking to you.
Bye.
Take it easy.